Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Contrary to what some people might assume, not all diplomats representing the State of Israel are Jewish. In this edition of Radio Curious, we visit with Ishmael Khaldi, who is based in San Francisco, California, and is the Deputy Consul General representing the State of Israel for the Pacific Northwest region. Ishmael Khaldi is a Muslim who was born and raised in a migrant Bedouin community in Galilee in northern Israel. He is the first Bedouin diplomat and the first Muslim in the Israeli Foreign Service. In this interview, he shares with us his journey, which has taken him from his migratory tribal roots to Northern California as an international diplomat, and his proposals for resolving the present-day internal conflicts within Israel. Ishmael Khaldi visited the studios of Radio Curious in Ukiah, California, on February 12, 2009. We began our conversation when I asked him how he defines his identity, being both a Bedouin Muslim and the Deputy Consul General for the State of Israel. Ishmael Khaldi, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thank you very much for having me here in this beautiful Ukiah.
You mentioned that you are an Israeli, as opposed to a Muslim working for a Jewish state.
Yeah, well, that was one of the comments made by one of the participants in the talk. And I said, no, I am not a Muslim working for Israel. I am an Israeli, Bedouin, a Muslim, who represent Israel.
When you represent Israel, with Israel being a Jewish state, are there limits on what you can say and do in expressing the position of the Israeli government?
No, I am representing the Israeli government. I am representing everything Israel, because after all, I am Israel. My religion is different from the mainstream of Israeli Jews, my culture and my language. But again, that is the beauty of Israel as a democracy and a diverse country. And, you know, sometimes you hear from Jews, for instance, here in America, people stand up and say, I am a Jew. Okay, so you are a Jew, but I am a Muslim and I am representing Israel. And it's sometimes I feel myself caught in the middle.
What is the percentage of non-Jewish people in the Israeli Foreign Service?
Well, very few. Very few for one reason, and one is that it's a different culture. You know, our tradition, I was the first Bedouin to join the Foreign Service. First of all, you know, the default for a man, a young man, a Bedouin, once you are high school, if you have the chance to go high school, and if you are lucky enough to attend college education, is to go back to your community to teach, to contribute to the community, and stick to the Bedouin heritage. But leaving away not only the village, not only the country, but you know, just leaving the country, being all over the world, away from your family, raising your kids in different atmospheres, that is something, you know, not usual. So many people choose to not to go back to their community. So that's one reason. The other reason is the demand to be a diplomat today. Not everybody is enough qualified. So still, and we are a minority, you know, the non-Jewish minority in Israel still are a minority. We are a minority all over, in the government positions and in other areas.
I'm interested in what your childhood was like. Growing up as one of 11 children, living in a Bedouin tribal community until you were approximately 8 or 9 years old. Your home was a tent. You moved from place to place?
Well, I'm third of 11 brothers and sisters, and we lived in a little tent like the rest of the tribe. You know, Bedouins are a tribal society in a small village, like one unit living. And it was a great experience to live in hard conditions, but keeping close to each other, the social structure. The whole tribe is one big family. So we are all cousins, first cousins and second cousins, and we are one social unit. And that's what the Bedouin's life is about.
And then you became interested in the outside world. You obtained some graduate degrees in foreign studies, foreign service, international relations. What drew you to life away from your childhood origins?
This brings me to what I've been doing lately, and that's writing my book called The Shepherd Journey. Yeah, I've been I made a long way since my childhood as a shepherd living in tents in the northern part of Israel in the hills of the Galil, until today serving as Israeli diplomat here in San Francisco. It's a long way. It was very challenging. It's a long adventure, meeting so many people, learning so many things about the world, not just the place I lived in, the village and Israel, but to see differences in other parts of the world, other minorities living in America, in Australia, in England, in Canada. But I, above everything, is, you know, keeping my tradition, being a modern version of a nomad, moving between countries, between cultures, between different worlds. And that strength, and that gives you more strength to share the experience with others.
I understand that it was difficult for your parents when you left your native community to join the Israeli Foreign Service. What is their opinion of the work that you're doing now?
Well, first of all, it was hard for them to leave away, because all they wanted to do is to see me after college, coming back, living near them, getting married above everything, because that's expectation of every parent. About what I do, they are proud, because my face is their face and it's the face of the country. We have a right and we have the ability to represent the country, because when people hear about Israel in America and in everywhere in the world, they hear only about, you know, Israel being a Jewish state, but we are also part of it. We also participated in the building of the state of Israel, our grandparents. And my parents were here a year ago, and it was their first trip here to the States. I think that when they saw what I'm doing, what I, you know, I do represent for the good and for the bad. So they were proud about it, that, you know, here the son, their son, who they raised in the little village in tough conditions, can do everything. Everything is possible.
Your visit here to Mendocino County was to talk about the Israeli experience as an Israeli diplomat.
Yeah, the part of my work is to connect to the local communities, to share the experience from Israel, to bring more information about Israel. And I had to tell that in my 2 years here, I found that people don't know enough about us. They know little from the news. But also to listen, like yesterday in my talk, I heard some criticism, which is respectful. And to take it to myself, to take it back to Israel. And it's important to hear the voices, you know, bring our voice, but also to hear, you know, voices from here, local communities. Because we are, as diplomats, here to build relations, to build exchange programs in the future, if possible. And looking for the differences and not escape away, but turn that into a way of cooperation, understanding.
What is some of the criticism of Israel that you hear from American Jews?
Well, I hear it not only from American Jews, from, you know, other people all over. I hear lots of support, but also criticism about political situation mainly. You know, the conflict with the Palestinians, which is on the heart of Israel's problems, I would say. And interesting to me that people in this very nice, you know, beautiful and calm place in Mendocino, people are criticizing Israeli government only on politics. And they don't criticize us on our health policies, educational policies. But it's something, you know, that we are learning from. You know, Israel is not perfect like maybe America is, if America is perfect, but we are learning.
You say America being perfect with a certain amount of jestful grin as a way to be a diplomat?
You know, I have to tell you one thing. I grew up on the fact that America is the center of the world and it's the best place in the world. My first trip to America was right after high school. I came to New York as the first city in the entire world. Try to imagine the trip from a little Bedouin village all the way to New York City, the huge differences, and surviving 3 months in New York, coming with the image that it's a golden life and it's a land of milk and honey.
Well, let's talk about Israeli politics, since that seems to be a primary issue of the diplomatic service and the main focus of the questions that you receive. I heard you mention that the organization of the Israeli state was primarily done by the Zionists in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. And they produced a fairly strong ideological bent as to how Israel should be. And more recently, Hamas and some of the other strong Palestinian groups were also organized by people with a strong ideological bent. Do you feel that those ideological positions represent the wider population of the Palestinian people and the Israeli people?
You know, looking at the Palestinians, I can't tell. I don't know if the vast majority of Palestinians would want to see as their choice of leadership a radical movement. You know, I learned in my life, and it's obvious, that economic welfare and having a life, that doesn't go together with radicalism and fanatic ideologies.
Is the radical or ideological position of the founders of Israel and the founders or the supporters of the Palestinian state representative of the Israeli people and the Palestinian people?
Maybe. I think on both sides you could see there was a struggle to form a nation state, to express their national aspirations, build a homeland, take their status and position among the nations, the other nations. Before Israel was established, 1920s, 1930s until 1948, when Israel was established, there were few Jewish organizations, Zionist organizations, who each thought that they are their representatives, they want to build a future Jewish state. And what happened at the end is David Ben-Gurion, who became the first prime minister of the state of Israel, made an end to the arguments among Jewish organizations and said clearly that from now on, and in order to build a safe Jewish state, there must be only one voice, one nation, one organization, one flag who will lead this effort. And this is what happened.
Except that currently, in the elections that occurred on February 10th of 2009, there were multiple parties. There wasn't one voice.
Well, that's something special about Israeli elections. If you look backward, in the last 20 years, we didn't have even one government who could complete a 4 years full term. I think more than anything, it reflects what's happening in the Israeli society on one side. You know, the different groups, different minorities, different political aspirations probably. You have secular, religious, right, left, Arabs, Jews, even among the Arab minority, there are different parties. You know, on one side, it's the beauty of a democratic, diverse country. On the other side, it's, you know, it leads to instability. Look what's happening in Italy, for instance. 1 year, 2 years, and elections. And then it goes on.
What is the policy of the Israeli government toward some Palestinian factions that would want Palestine to extend from the Mediterranean Sea to the Jordan River, which basically would encompass the entire area of Israel?
You know, that's not acceptable. to hear leaders or a group, organization, radical organization on the Palestinian side who aspire to lead the Palestinians, calling with the establishment of an independent Palestinian state on the remains of Israel, you know, that is not a human thing, first of all. I don't believe that the majority of Palestinians wants to see this happening or doesn't represent them. Palestinians do want to live near Israel in their own independent Palestinian state, democratic state, live in dignity, because that is the solution. Two state solutions, two nations, two democracies living in each other.
Do you see that as a viable solution?
Absolutely, yes. When is it going to happen? It may take time, and it will take time. It's a tough mission with bumps, because the conflict won't be solved tomorrow morning, you know. But it's possible.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Ishmael Khaldi, the Deputy Consul General for the Pacific Northwest region, representing the State of Israel.
Well, Ishmael Khaldi, what is your response then to the recently published book by former President Jimmy Carter, who talks about developing a highway from the West Bank on the west side of the Jordan River to Gaza that would be controlled by the Israeli government and allow communication to go back and forth between the West Bank and Gaza, which in some ways would geographically bifurcate Israel?
It's interesting because Gaza is split from the West Bank geographically. They're not connected. And there are many thoughts in Israel since 1993, the Oslo agreements, to find ways, creative ways, how to connect Gaza to the West Bank, where there will be a free flow between Gaza and the West Bank, and controlled by joint mission Israeli-Palestinian. And there must be a way. I mean, it won't split Israel, absolutely not. Once things are done peacefully on agreements with both sides, I think it's possible. There were thoughts about a highway. There were both about maybe tunnel. I believe there are ways, creative ways, and they will be found with time.
Let's talk about some of the Arab nations in the Middle East, and specifically Iran, and the current policies of Iran.
You know, Iran and Israel are very special. First of all, because being the non-Arab countries in the entire Middle East, Israel had relations with Iran until 1978, when the revolution started there, end of the Shah regime. Israel had a mission, an embassy in Tehran. There were great relations, commerce. And Iranians are not, we don't see them as our enemies. Iranian people, like are the other nations in the Middle East, peace seekers. The only problem is with the leadership in Iran. You know, calling to wipe Israel out of the map. Israel is a cancer in the heart of the world. Denying the Holocaust. You know, those are statements that cannot be made by a leader who wants to be respected among the world and lead his country. So that's very sad.
What about nuclear power versus petroleum resources in Iran?
You know, Iran has, like other rich countries in the Middle East, oil reserves that can be sufficient for the coming few hundred years, and natural gas. Nuclear power, you know, Iran is seeking, that's not something that I'm seeing or Israel is seeing, the entire world is looking about it with concern, calling for, or their efforts is intended for nuclear weapons. And not nuclear power like in the Western world. And that, to us, it's scary. To the Arab countries in the Middle East, it is scary. And it's scary for other countries in the Western world, even.
So where will this lead if Iran is supporting Hamas on the borders of Israel?
Yeah, again, I want to pretend being a Palestinian and look at this. Would I want to see myself building relations with remote country with poisonous intentions to kill my neighbor? I like this neighbor. I don't like this neighbor. I will have to live with him. I'll have to work with him. I will have to build a future for my kids and his kids in the future. Our economic ties are with each other, within each other, and can't be split. You know, in Bedouin tradition, there's a saying that me and my brother against my cousin, and me and my cousin against the stranger. And the cousin here is, Jews and Muslims, and everybody else is a stranger. I hope this will lead to a moderate voice on the Palestinians who will stop this support by Iran through the tunnels from the Egyptian border of missiles and rockets and shells of all range and types, and start getting support on more human issues, education, and other means.
How is that position resolved when it's put next to someone who would promote suicide bombing, with the understanding, as at least has been relayed to me, that a suicide bomber, once dead, is in a much better place?
And it's interesting to me, and probably to you and everyone, to hear from a suicide bomber, if he would come back to life and tell us about his experience with the 72 virgins and the promised Garden of Eden after he suicided himself, killing innocent souls, innocent people. I do believe, again, that the Palestinians' desire is to choose with a more moderate voice, that the solution with Israel will be one of peace, one of peaceful talks in order to achieve reconciliation, and not through terrorism and aggression and violence.
But how then does that apply to someone who wants to promote violence by killing themselves and anybody else who would be near? Because they have disregard for their own life and the life of others, or they believe that they go to a better life.
Well, again, the point is what percent are they on the Palestinian side? I do believe they are a minority. I do believe that the majority of Palestinians want peace and want to operate against those radical forces. Now, this minority is ruling that, unfortunately. This minority is deciding for the Palestinians. I think it has to come, first of all and above all, from them, from the Palestinian society. They are the ones who to decide how to or who to choose in order to sign their agreements with Israel.
When you return to Israel, when you're done with your stay in the United States or some other country, do you have aspirations to be involved in Israeli politics, elective politics?
I am very committed to help my community in Israel. Bedouin community, the non-Jewish community, needs many of us, the ones who have the experience with the Israeli government, you know, to help them promote education, health, and many other issues that we as a conservative, as traditional society still are facing in our efforts to join Israel as a modern society. The government is doing itself its own part to integrate Bedouins into its society institutions, but still lots of work is in our shoulders. We, the young leaders of this community, the ones who living in both worlds, understand more than anybody else what the needs are, what is possible, and how to combine the best onwards. I'm a foreign service diplomat. I'm going back. The government will decide for me. My office will decide to me what to do next. But if it would be my choice, I'd want to come here to Ukiah. Live for 2 years, 3 years. It's a beautiful place.
Well, we thank you very much for coming here to Ukiah and visiting us in the studios of Radio Curious. And before we close, can you tell us an important idea or concept that you've learned lately?
Something that I learned lately, I'll tell you this. When I grew up, water was a major issue in our daily life. Bedouins moved from place to another looking for water resources, and it was a matter of life or less life, I would say. When I came here today as an adult with responsibility, I'm seeing that the issue here is more even severe than in Israel. I came from a trip last week from in Idaho, and I met people on academia and on the government, and I'm doing the same here in California, and I see that the effort to keep this source available is the same like in Israel. And I think that Israel is leading in this side. And my effort will be to invest in bringing Israeli experience, technology if needed, here to the States, to help it have to be joined force.
And Ismail Kaldi, can you tell us of an interesting book that you've read lately?
Yeah, I'm still reading. The name of the book is, I know it, in translated from Hebrew, Point of No Return, or something like this in English. A dear friend, Ronan Bergman, who wrote a book, just him, by the way, in English now, about efforts of Israel and America at some point toward Iran and Hezbollah. West and East meet. Understanding an Eastern fundamental society comes to an expression. And it's very interesting. I urge everybody to read the book.
Ismail Kaldi, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you very much for having me here, Ari. And I want to come back to this beautiful place to share my experience with everybody. So anything that people have to ask, they can talk to call us at the consulate. My direct number on 415-844-7500. We'll be more than glad to help, to assist. You know, sometimes we don't agree with everything, but we are here to build a dialogue and build a relation. And if all goes well, I will be publishing my book sometime in the early summer. Thank you very much again, Bernie.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Ismail Kaldi is the Deputy Consul General for the State of Israel, based in San Francisco, California. His direct phone number is 415-844-7500. The book he recommends is The Secret War with Iran, the 30-year clandestine struggle against the world's most dangerous terrorist power, by Ronan Bergman. This interview was recorded on February 12, 2009, in the studios of Radio Curious in Ukiah, California. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious can be found on our website, www.radiocurious.org. They're also available in CD format for $14 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org, and the phone is 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for joining us.